Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the Wizarding World right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardingcandles.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the mysteries behind Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 20, The Dementor's Kiss, live in Sacramento!
Oh, man. That might have been our loudest one yet.
That might have been. You guys are so loud.
That was so good. Oh, my goodness gracious. Yes, the Dementor's Kiss. What we learned today, we just mentioned this to the crowd. But for the listeners at home, this is apparently the shortest chapter in all of Harry Potter.
I know, which, like, we were looking at, like, a lot of times I'll listen to the chapter as well as read it. And, I mean, you can just look at it like, that's it. That's the whole chapter right there. But, last chapter, it's like 36 minutes of audiobook. This one was like 8.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was like, oh no.
It's like, oh boy, hopefully there's some meat on the bone.
Hopefully something important happens.
I mean, yeah. We'll find something to discuss, I'm sure, including a couple fun theory propositions.
I think so.
So we got to kick off with the chapter art, as per always. So,
which if you can see.
Yeah, we're going to show you guys here in the room with us. What we're seeing here, though, is Harry in just, like, absolutely epic fashion. Wand out. You can see, like, the silver mist kind of gently holding back all the hooded figures of
cape
the Dementor.
Billowing in the wind.
I know, the
and
cape.
What? He's always got a cape in the artwork. it's not mentioned in the text.
Never. Not once.
Not once. But he's wearing a cape.
The invisibility cloak.
It is not the cloak. He does not have it right now. Right?
Who has it?
Snape brought it to the shack. And either way, even if he's wearing the invisibility cloak, he's doing it wrong. Because, like, like, he's in full sight.
Because we can see him.
We can see him.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that's kind of interesting about it is that there are three people, notably, in this scene.
Yeah.
And only two people shown in the chapter art.
Yes.
And what's fascinating about it is that the person laying on the ground, I read as Hermione.
I'm pretty sure it's Hermione. Yeah.
But she is wearing, like, a striped shirt.
I know.
Which kind of, it's like, it's giving prison.
It's, yeah, yeah. Yes, it's prison core.
It's prison core, yeah. Did we use that right?
I know. Yeah. Oh, gosh. We're so young.
Isabel's been teaching us all the Gen Z slang.
I know. I was staring at this. I'm like, it has to be serious. That's like the big thing in the chapter. But then I'm like trying to get my old eyes up at the face. And I'm like, that's Hermione. That's for sure. Her hair's too nice. Like, but then why is she wearing a striped shirt? It's so confusing.
Yeah, of any other shirt we could have gone. What was that?
Yeah.
It's the 90s.
But, like, where's her cape, you know? I mean,
yeah, Harry's got the cape. Yeah. I mean, those are always in.
Those are always in, yeah. Good cape weather, you know.
It's good cape weather.
Light and breezy, you know?
Light and breezy, yeah. I do like how much his cape is flowing. Like, there's a small piece of me that likes to think that Harry's just, like, a little bit of a showman. And he brought, like, a giant, like, fan out into the forest, and he's like, you never know.
Yeah, maybe he's got like a little spell that just, like, makes it billow.
Right, you know? Yeah. You gotta have that wind-blown look.
Exactly. Like, if I'm going down, I'm going to look cool. Okay, but so, as I was staring at the artwork on this one with this wall of Dementors on it, I actually, it made me think, like, obviously, Dementors always kind of look like death, you know? Like
yeah.
The Grim Reaper.
Yeah, for
sure.
That's
sort of how they're just a big hooded cloak thing. And I was staring at this particular picture, and it made me, like, wonder, like, is, like, because there is, like, death is sort of a character eventually in the story, in the Tale of the Three Brothers.
Right.
Where he makes the Deathly Hallows. So it made me wonder, like, is it possible that death itself is a Dementor?
Oh.
Right? Because okay, listen to this. He gives the third brother a cloak of invisibility, and the Dementors are invisible to Muggles, right?
Interesting.
Right? I know what you're thinking. Like, why would this Dementor become death? What would make it so good? Is there anything that Dementors eat that could eventually, like, I don't know, humanize them or something? And it's like, if you had, like, the Dementor that consumed, like, enough souls that it became, like, a new being.
Yeah.
That is death.
This is, like, tripping me out in real time a little bit. I mean, like, what the Grim Reaper does, like, and even the reason he's, like, making the deal with the brothers is he feels like he's been, like, cheated out of lives
yeah.
that should have yielded him more death points.
Yeah, he's, like, collecting souls.
He's right? collecting souls.
Exactly. That's what Dementors do.
What would you say if I made the argument that I think there's a possibility that Chief Death himself might be there? On
Chief
this
Death?
Chief Death.
The Death?
The Death.
Capital D?
Capital D Death.
Wow, okay.
I mean, under this premise, I mean, I'm not here to, like, put the like, hey, we just created a new theory stamp on it. But there was one line in the series that made no, or in this chapter that made no sense to me. And I was like, I wonder what is happening
with
this particular instance.
Okay.
And I underlined it, and I was going to ask you about it. And then the moment you said this, I was like, light bulb.
Did a light bulb. So I solved it ahead of time.
You solved it. Well, maybe.
We're going to come back to it. Yeah. Okay. Is death the Dementor? That's the question.
The Chief Dementor.
Chief Dementor. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, well, I guess we'll come back to it. But that was my thought. Just looking at the picture, I was like, wait a minute. The more I'm thinking about it, it's making more sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. That's good inspiration from the chapter art as well.
Yeah.
So you got to love that. So, okay. Then, without any further ado, let's go ahead and give a quick recap of basically where we just were. Because the folks here live have not heard the most recent episodes.
No, they haven't.
We have long surpassed what is now publicly available.
So right.
We are currently in the process of exiting the passageway underneath the Whomping Willow from the Shrieking Shack. Snape is currently unconscious,
yep.
And Ron and Lupin
are chained to Peter.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So they're working their way out.
They're working their way out. Crookshanks is leading the way. Sirius is doing the most marauder thing ever and just bumping Snape's head on the ceiling. I love that.
Dude. We talked about this in last week's episode, but the thing is that earlier in the previous chapter, when Snape is in a position of power, he binds Lupin, and he's basically like, I'll drag the werewolf back to the castle.
Yeah.
So I've always felt like the way that they treat Snape in this instance is a little indignant, but then I was sort of like, Snape was going to physically drag Lupin.
On the ground.
On the ground.
With his big muscles.
Yeah.
You know, you think Snape's hitting the gym?
Bulging biceps.
Yes, right.
Actually, there is
Swole
something to
Snape.
Be. Yeah. I mean, that's why he wears the big billowing robes.
Exactly.
He's kind of like a sleeper underneath there.
Let me tell you what. If anyone's casting a billowing spell on their cape.
Oh, it's Snape.
It's Snape, yeah.
For effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He's practicing in front of the mirror.
Oh, no. But
this was actually another fun little theory that came out of last chapter's episode, is at some point in time, Sirius is talking to Harry, and he says that he had basically been living in the forest ever since he had escaped and, like, slipped into the Hogwarts ground.
Yeah.
And there's one exception, and he says, except when I came to watch the Quidditch.
The Quidditch.
And I was like, why is he calling it the Quidditch?
Yeah.
That's like your friend who doesn't watch sports and they're like, what are you watching, the football?
Right.
Want to watch the sports?
Yeah.
And, you know, I always assume, because James and Sirius are such good pals, that, like, Sirius is kind of like, you know, jock man number two.
Number two.
To Sirius's, like, you know, varsity jacket wearing swagger.
Right.
But we never get any indication that Sirius is on the Quidditch team.
No, we don't. Yeah, but we know Regulus was on the Slytherin Quidditch team and played Seeker.
Right.
But we don't get, cool. You're right. We don't get any indication that Sirius played Quidditch at all, which is surprising.
It is surprising. Yeah. And meanwhile, at some point in the last chapter, they're trying to theorize as to why Snape dislikes James so much. And they're like, I think it's because he was so good on the Quidditch pitch. And it's like, you guys are morons. Yeah. It's because of Lily.
Because of Lily, dude. Yeah. But you guys couldn't figure that out. You get, it's like, Lupin, is that why you're single, man?
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah. But the thing is that it's like, why would they think Quidditch? You know, that seems like such a leap.
Right.
But then when you think about Snape, it's like at some point in time, he was refereeing a Quidditch match.
Yep.
Him and McGonagall, long before Harry arrives at school, have their rivalry about Quidditch.
He's in the Battle of the Seven Potters, flying a broom,
doing totally great, like no big deal. And, you know, like Sirius, on the other hand, while he loves gifting a broomstick, what is his notable flying object?
Mm-hmm. Not a broom.
Not a broom.
Not a broom.
Because he calls it the Quidditch.
Yeah.
Because the boy can't fly.
Sirius can't fly on a broom.
It's just a whole new perspective on the man.
Yeah, you know, you'd think he'd just sort of be good at everything. But
You would think. But it also means that Snape possibly does have bulging biceps that he could use.
Maybe Snape played Quidditch.
That's what I'm saying,
Yeah.
Was he a beater? That's a good question.
Sounds like he was a loser.
Oh... It's true, though.
I mean,
not like in an uncool way, but like James.
But like literally, right?
Yeah, I mean, James always beat him.
He was losing the matches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Being
this is the only. That's the only reason they can be like that. Must be why
it was the Quidditch.
He's so jealous of James.
Yeah.
No other obvious reason.
Yeah. Yep. That could be it.
Hey, Lily.
Hey. Anyway, that's all last chapter stuff.
That's all last chapter stuff.
I just wanted people to know.
Yeah. I don't want people to miss out on these. Sirius can't fly a broom.
Yeah.
Even after this, he's like, you know what? Could he get a broom to move around? Maybe. But he's like, you know, it'd be easier having a convict bird horse with me. I'll stick with that.
Yeah. It's like, Sirius, you don't have to feed a broomstick.
I know. Come on, man.
It's not massive.
Can't you apparate? Yeah.
We're throwing a lot of shade at Sirius,
and he's not going to have a good chapter. So maybe we'll move on. Yeah. All right. So let's see. We're still walking through the tunnel here, and Sirius starts talking to Harry, saying that, like, do you know what it means if we turn Pettigrew in? And Harry's like, yeah, that you're free. And he's like, he explains to him that he's his godfather, and that his parents appointed him as guardian. And, you know, do you want to come and live with me? And I, like, first of all, the fact that this like one little paragraph, it all happens right here. This right here, bam, not much. This is like, it's so heartbreaking because this offer is on the table and it feels like such an escape for Harry and it will never come to pass.
I know. And I mean, you as the reader, like, I've talked about it so many times, but like when you spend like those early chapters with the Dursleys and you see just how bad it is and then how constantly this idea of expulsion is held over him, and we as the reader hate that possibility because you're like, no, then he has to go back and live with the Dursleys.
Right.
Like, that is so worst case scenario here.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's the moment where you're like, no way.
We've gotten out.
He's not going to have to go back.
Everything's coming together.
I know. And this is kind of like a really interesting moment as well, because of something else that we sort of like, that Sirius, I think, outlines really well about when he's describing his experience during his time in Azkaban.
Yeah.
Because Sirius kind of uniquely isn't massively or majorly impacted. Well, I mean, he is. Like, it's a terrible experience. But, like, because he knows he's innocent, he's sort of, like, able to, like, hold on to some piece of who he is.
Yeah.
But then he also clarifies that, like, what the Dementors do is they feed on your happy memories.
Right.
And this wasn't a happy memory that he was innocent.
Yes.
Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I think is really kind of interesting about this, they've just entered back onto the grounds. They're having this conversation right here, which kind of goes in a really fascinating way, because Sirius, for like the whole last like three chapters, he's phrased everything just about as badly as any innocent person is capable of doing. It's like, did you kill Lillian James Potter? And he's like, I might as well have.
Yeah.
It's like, but this is important, Sirius.
It's like, but did you really?
We needs to know what your role in it was. And so when we finally know, we know that Sirius basically blames himself because he came up with the idea. Now there's this moment for Harry to take his turn, where Sirius is, you know, this is like a big moment for him. He's like, of course, I thought you wouldn't want to, said Sirius quickly. I understand. I just thought I'd. And Harry responds with, are you insane?
I know.
And I'm like, poor Sirius.
I know.
You know, he's like, he just put his heart out there. And Harry's like, are you crazy?
Yeah.
You were a convicted murderer like 8 minutes ago.
Yeah.
That's how it reads, Harry. That's how it reads.
Yeah.
But it is kind of cute, because it says that his voice is as croaky as Sirius's. And then he follows up with, of course I want to leave the Dursleys. Have you got a house? When can I move in? And this moment is huge, because what it yields is Harry, it's like, he says, you mean it? And Harry says, yes, I mean it. And then it says, Sirius's gaunt face broke into the first true smile Harry had seen upon it. The difference it made was startling, as though a person 10 years younger were shining through the starved mask. And it says, for a moment, he was recognizable as the man who had laughed at Harry's parents' wedding. Okay.
Okay.
This is all a big build-up, because this is, I think, very important as to what happens next.
Okay.
Because the Dementors couldn't feed on anything of Sirius's.
Oh, but now he has a happy memory.
He is radiating.
Yeah.
Happiness.
Right, it's like how they find him.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, that is a great point, because I was like, how do they even find him? How do they know? He's a dog.
I think what it says, because it's not just like a few Dementors, it is hundreds of Dementors. I think Sirius walked out of the... Are we okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
I think Sirius...
Oh. Dude, that's a really good catch.
Right?
I think because I had that question, I was like, what? Like, the Dementors show up, and I guess you're supposed to think, like, I guess they just saw him or whatever, or could feel him. But you're right, like, they don't have eyes. And it's like, how could they feel him so obvious? And it's like, this is it. This is why.
Because
this
he's a beacon.
He's
all
a beacon
sudden.
Of happiness, of, like, tremendous happiness.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a really good catch. All right. Also, before we turn the page, also, there was a sentence up here as well, like when Sirius makes the offer, it says, some sort of explosion took place in the pit of Harry's stomach, which I really like that line, because that's Harry realizing that, like, oh my gosh, wait a minute, I can live with you? Which, like, if you know, he already knew Sirius was his godfather, and he already knew he was free, so it's like all the pieces were on the table for Harry to just figure this out himself.
Right.
Yeah, but, like, what I like about this line in particular is that it means that Harry has, like, not fully realized the ramifications of, like, what it will actually mean for Sirius to be innocent. Because in the last chapter, Sirius is berating Peter, and he says something to the effect of, you never did anything if you couldn't see what would be in it for you, or whatever. And Peter is like, well, you know, oh, he was taking over. What was to be gained by not, you know, fighting him or whatever? And so what this sentence means, some sort of explosion took place in the pit of Harry's stomach, is that Harry had no idea what was in it for him in sparing Sirius's life.
Right.
He's just like, he's just doing it because it's the right thing. And now it's sort of like hitting him. They're like, oh, this could positively impact me.
Yeah. Harry hasn't thought about himself at all.
At all. And it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. So I really like that line in particular, because not only does it say a lot about Harry, but it's in complete contrast with how Peter acts in like three pages ago.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. The other small note that I have before we fully turn the page here is that, and this is like one of those things that I picked up on from listening both the audiobook and reading the story at the same time, there's a really big change that happens throughout this whole chapter where I almost feel like a little bit of like writing muscle memory had kicked in, but all throughout this story, when it was read for the first time for the audiobook, every time it says Sirius's name, it's saying black instead. Yeah. So it's referring to Sirius by like his last name, not by his first name.
Yeah.
And I do think that that tonal shift of switching it to Sirius is like, we're no longer talking about escaped convict Black.
Yeah.
Now we are talking about Sirius, the Godfather.
Right.
So that's a change that like I can completely track where it came from.
Absolutely. I mean, Harry does the same thing. He's been calling him Black out loud the whole book, and now he starts calling him Sirius by his first name instead.
Yes.
Yeah. So nice subtle shift in how they view the character. But so let's see. Finally turning the first page here. Look at that. We made it one page in.
Hey, look at us go.
Hey. Yay!
Huzzah!
So we're still walking through the trunk here. It's a Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron clambered upward without any sound of savaging branches. I'm surprised how like compliant Peter is being here. Like he's just sort of going along with it.
Well, do you think like we talked a little bit in last week's chapter? Like Peter, you know, for all of his faults, he's a shockingly quick thinker.
Oh, he's a very fast thinker.
Yeah. Like it's kind of unbelievable as he's like going through the process. The number of different times, despite all the extremely like bad evidence and the fact that he was a rat for 12 years and just got transformed into a man, like he does a successful job of making you like almost be like, yeah, that is an argument.
Yeah, like, he is like very aware of all the different lines of doubt that could be in the water, and like keeping track of like what people know versus what they only think they know, and like using that against them quickly.
Very quickly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So it's like, I mean, and that's one of those details as well, where you got to remember like Peter, again, for better or for worse, was a marauder.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, this is a group of wizards that are pretty high caliber. So in order to hang with that group, you know, he had to have some wits about him. So yeah, I agree with you. He is just sort of like meandering along, but I have to imagine he is like, you know, head on a swivel in this moment.
Oh yeah, he's looking for an escape, and one is going to present itself to him. So let's see. Harry's mind is buzzing. He's going to leave the Dursleys. I can only imagine what a relief that would feel like to Harry, like to just be realizing it in the moment. What would happen when he told the Dursleys he was going to live with the convict they'd seen on television? That sounds hilarious.
It is. Yes. Yeah. You can only imagine that they would be like, I mean, because that would probably put Vernon on his guard for the rest of his life.
Absolutely.
You know?
He would never have another comfortable night.
No. Yeah. He works from home, probably, you know?
Yeah.
At that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he wants to go patrol the... just in case. What if he ran into him?
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows where they'd be? I feel like they'd go mess with him.
I definitely think they would go mess with them. Yeah, okay. Because that's the thing. I mean, think about how much Sirius is all about standing up for his friends. Harry's about, you know, if he just goes and lives with them and they get to have conversations, and Sirius is like, tell me about childhood.
Yeah.
How was it?
Because clearly at this point, he's sort of the opinion that like, yeah, living with the Dursleys must be kind of okay. You know,
right.
There's no reason you'd want to leave, right?
Right. Yeah. Like he's worried Harry wouldn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then Harry's going to have some stories to tell.
Yeah. And he's going to be like, what's that now?
They locked you in a cupboard for how long?
Come again for big dog.
Yeah. Come again for big dog. Yeah. I love it. Okay, but so then they're out on the castle grounds. The lights are slowly growing larger. Snape is still drifting weirdly ahead of Sirius. His chin is still bumping on his chest. And then a cloud shifts. And there were suddenly dim shadows on the ground. Their party was bathed in moonlight.
This is an interesting sentence.
Lay it on me.
Okay, here's the thing. Their party's made in moonlight. Okay,
because how could that be relevant to the rest of the chapter?
It's extremely relevant. Their party is made in moonlight. Because here's the thing. It's been the full moon the whole time, right? Like Lupin has exited the tree into the full moon. It's just behind a cloud, right? Like the full moon is up.
It's
werewolf time.
It is growing increasingly difficult to understand how easy it seems to be like that you could just bypass Lupin's lycanthropy.
I know.
Entirely.
I know.
It's like, go out on cloudy nights, stay under a tree,
stay in windowless rooms, you know, like, not seem that hard.
Right. Just, basements.
Yeah. Yeah. Just walls.
These are
you're
the
in
options.
A castle. You
right,
know?
Yeah, you're
they
in
have
a castle.
A dungeon.
Right.
Right.
Several. Like,
several.
Couple
they teach
of them.
In there.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like he's out there and he's not being hit by the moonlight and he's not a werewolf yet. So it feels like you have to be hit by the moonlight.
And maybe so, yeah. Direct contact.
Direct contact.
Moon bathing.
Moon bathing, okay. As it were.
Can I hot take alert?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm a little worried because we do have people in here who I have to stare in the eyes. But this moment in particular has to be one of my least favorite moments in the entire set of films.
Oh.
Where
it's just like the searchlight, like...
Yes. And then it like... Like, y'all, that's not the moon.
That's not how moonlight works, yeah.
And it like super zooms on Lupin's face. All right, is anyone with me on this? Are we? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. Like the major zoom on the eye. Yeah. I hope we caught that on camera.
Yeah.
That was, yeah.
Hopefully. Oh, man. So how werewolves work, who knows? Because I also looked this up. Apparently, like, if we can go out. If it's full moon, you can perceive a full moon for, like, 3 days.
Yes.
You know, so does that, like, is there 3 nights to be aware of? Yeah. Right? Or is it just one?
It's like the same thing as like an eclipse. Like there's only one moment where it's completely.
That's the other thing. It says full moon because otherwise, if it has to be full moon, it's like it is only a full moon for like an instant.
Right.
You know.
In which case, how unfortunate is this scene?
Right.
It's like, what are the odds?
What are the odds? Just that exact second. It seems like there's a margin of error. You know, it's like 98%-ish full moon is good enough.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah, yeah. They didn't pay the math budget.
They didn't pay the math budget on this. Yeah. Is it 3 nights a week? Is it 1 night? Could he just stay inside? We may never know.
Yeah.
But on this night, he's hit by a spotlight of moonbeam.
Yeah.
Takes a bath and transforms.
There it is. There is good setup for this, though. I mean, this I think is one of the great moments. It's sort of like it's the initial ignition point for Snape to go out and be looking for Lupin in the first place, and then ultimately find himself inside of the Shrieking Shack and everything else, because it has already been established earlier. Like, if you're reading and paying attention, you could realize that like Lupin was supposed to take his potion and he hasn't.
Yeah.
So
I mean, this is another one of those things where it's like the moment you learn he's a werewolf, you should also be knowing that. There's no use in telling you that if he's not going to transform.
Right, right. Like, yes. Is this the only time we ever see him in werewolf form?
Yes.
Because it seems like one of those issues that kind of like, it's like, it's fortunate that none of the Order of the Phoenix things ever happen on full moon nights.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are the odds?
Again, slim.
I know. I personally would have loved it if, like, at the Battle of Hogwarts, it had been full moon.
Dude.
Right?
Because. If you have a moment, and if anybody would ever give us some reins to use here, I would absolutely have a battle between Fenrir and Lupin.
Right.
Yeah.
Werewolf form.
Goodness gracious. That would be epic.
That'd be great.
And Lupin would win.
Lupin would win.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And then probably still die.
Probably, yeah.
Right.
We gave you guys a moment.
Yeah, 1 second. You know, he gets to have a cool moment, but like, you know, let's not change too much now.
Right. Maybe he saves Lav.
Maybe, well, almost, you know. Maybe she's a werewolf now.
Ooh.
Because here's the other thing. It is like the threat of the werewolf is that someone else gets bitten. And it's like, this is a werewolf literally chained to two other people. And there's like, what, 4 other people, one of whom is a floating mannequin. And as I want to say, Kat and Ethan and Isabel said, werewolves hunt humans. And this werewolf in particular hates the floating mannequin. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe Snape's not a werewolf at this point. He's right there.
Can vampires even be werewolves?
The ultimate creature.
Yeah.
Mel loved him.
Bella
that's
would
death
love
itself.
Him.
That's death itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Bad.
So this is sort of it's a pretty intense moment though. Harry could see Lupin's silhouette. He had gone rigid. Then his limbs began to shake. Oh my! Hermione gasped.
Oh my.
He didn't take his potion tonight. He's not safe. We probably shouldn't have tied him to 2 other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not smart. Not smart. I can't believe Lupin would forget.
I know. Yeah, it feels like this would be top of mind. I guess he was shaken by the fact that two of his friends had completely different outcomes than he thought for the past 12 years.
I guess so. It was a big moment for him, yep. For sure.
We do get to see Sirius's protective instincts come immediately into play, though. He's just like, run, Sirius whispered. Run now. Which I think is just classic Sirius.
Classic Sirius is like, leave it to me. I've got this.
Yeah.
Which is great. The other thing here is that they established in the last chapter that, or Lupin says that after his friends turned into Animagus and they would run around, his mind would become less wolfish. And he could sort of be himself. It was like he's kind of describing the effects of the Wolfsbane potion, which is kind of interesting because what it means, what it kind of sounds like is like, the Wolfsbane potion is emulating friendship in a way.
Yeah.
Which is surprising that Snape can brew that.
But where did he get the experience
from? No idea. But he can do it.
But he can do it.
But he can make it. But here's the thing. Sirius is a dog and he's still pretty wolfish.
He is still pretty wolfish, yeah. What if this was their version of fun during high school, it goes something like this. Let's see here. They were locked, jaw to jaw, claws ripping at each other. Mm-hmm. So, not great.
Not great, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds dangerous.
It does sound a little bit painful. But here's kind of another interesting question that popped up in my mind, because we're going to see that Sirius is going to take some pretty serious blows during this battle.
Yeah.
He gets clawed up really badly. I'm trying to see where it's got here. Does it say it? It says his snout is slashed. Okay. Sirius was bleeding. There were gashes across his muzzle and back. What's kind of fascinating about this is that we know that Lupin always has claw marks and scratch marks and stuff from his own transformations.
Yeah.
But when Sirius transforms back, it doesn't seem like the damage he endures as a dog transfers back to him as a human.
It doesn't seem like he has a bloody face or anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes me think that what you are doing, because we always kind of have that classic question, if you transform a coffee table into a pig, then can you eat it?
Can you eat that pig?
Or is it just if you sliced it open, would it just be wood?
Right,
you know?
If you turn a pig into a table and then burn that wood.
The smell of bacon?
Smell of bacon. Yeah.
I hope so.
Sounds pretty neat. Sounds like a good business model.
But the other precedent we have set for this also comes from Peter, because he cuts off his finger. And when he cuts off his finger in rat form, he doesn't have the finger.
Right.
So I feel like the transformation is kind of interesting, because it's it's always unclear how much of themselves they truly are and what their capabilities are in their animal form. But this almost makes me think that this could even be part of the reason that they were safer around Lupin during their time, because any damage they endured as their animal forms wasn't coming back to them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It kind of makes sense. Yeah, I mean, especially it's really lucky he didn't take a bite at Peter right here. It seems like it would have been really easy for Peter in particular to have died.
In this particular moment?
Well, it's just running around the grounds.
Oh, being a small rat.
Yeah, James and Sirius, they can just they could take a blow. Peter, dead,
One good slash.
One good slash, which honestly, he's literally chained to the man and still avoids it, so.
I know.
I can't believe Peter doesn't die right here. That would have been really convenient.
Maybe Lupin's in the best possible way, the worst possible werewolf.
Right, yeah.
super ineffective.
Right. Just not taking people out. Doesn't get a single person, really.
Okay, but actually, so here's another interesting one, because there's a couple of big things that could happen inside of this situation. Because the other thing we got to talk about is that the side effects of Lupin transforming into werewolf kind of sows chaos for the rest of the group.
Absolutely.
Not the least of which is the fact that someone drops a wand.
Lupin drops a wand.
Because he's a werewolf.
Yeah.
So Pettigrew dives for Lupin's wand, to which we just need to point out the fact that Sirius definitely doesn't have his when he's in Azkaban.
Right.
And the way he escapes is by transforming into a dog.
So he doesn't need a wand.
So he doesn't need a wand.
Right.
Peter definitely does, which I like to bring up because it shows Sirius is better at this than Peter.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, this is like, I looked this up too, because I was really going back and forth. Because, like, if you look up Animagus, it says they can transform between the two, like, at will, like, just without use of a wand. But, like, and then I was trying to read this, like, really get between the lines, because, like, it says, like, Harry notices, well, first of all, Peter, like, stuns Ron and Crookshanks, like, non-verbally, too, just, like, blasts them both. Which, good, like, I never noticed that he had the foresight to, like, get, incapacitate Crookshanks. Like, he's got his plan. He's, like, turn into rat. There will still be a cat. Get rid of cat.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes.
Fast thinker.
Yes. No, I had the exact same note. And if anything, this is a little bit morbid, but I think it could almost have been a missed opportunity to kill Crookshanks.
Oh. Like, just take him out of the story?
Just take him out of the story.
Because, right.
I mean, I know it's a little bit dark. It's not like I'm, like, cheering for it or anything like that. But, like, sometimes the deaths in the story do sort of, like, help illustrate the stakes of what's going on here. I think it would also illustrate who Peter is even more. Because, I mean, like, we know Peter is not going to go on to be a better guy.
Yeah.
No.
It would kind of be an instance. Like, sometimes, like, whenever you introduce things into the story, because we encounter this when we're writing our what ifs all the time, where it's sort of like, you know, you'll be telling the story from one person's perspective. We'll have a narrative that we like digging into and doing that whole thing. And at some point in time, you're like, oh yeah, what was Neville doing? It's like, we haven't mentioned him in like a long time.
Yeah.
Neville was here.
Right.
He said this thing. He did this. So it's almost like it feels like an opportunity to demonstrate Peter who he truly is, his true character, and also then like not have the requirement to like write what Crookshanks is doing for future episodes.
Right, yeah. He's out of the story now.
Yeah.
That's it. But anyway, to get to the point, like whether or not you need a wand to do it, like Harry points his wand, Expelliarmus, and it says, too late. Which, you can read into it a lot. Because it just sounds like, was he just holding the wand? And, like, he disarmed him, but it didn't matter because he'd already transformed without the use of it. But, like, otherwise, why say too late? Like, too late makes it sound like the Expelliarmus was too late. Which means he needed the wand to do it.
Right.
Right?
Yes. Unless it's some other version of, like, he was wandless, but too late. Now he's transformed, and now we can't catch him or something.
But then the other thing is the prophecy states that for the past 12 years, the servant has been chained. And it's like, chained is an interesting word because it makes you think of Sirius, who was in Azkaban.
Right,
and
yes.
Not of Peter, who was not chained to anything. He was just living very comfortably with the Weasleys.
Yes.
So how is he chained? And it's like, if he's chained as he literally can't transform back because he doesn't have a wand.
Right.
Like he's stuck as a rat. That feels like chained.
That does feel like chained.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I my headcanon is that Peter can't do it without a wand and Sirius can.
That's my, yeah.
And I mean it in every way, shape, and form as a slight against Peter.
Yeah. There we go. All right. It sounds like everyone agrees.
Yeah. There we go. Cool. Excellent.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So at this point, so Peter is escaping. Unfortunate. Harry notices. He yells to Sirius. This is what he calls him by name. Sirius, he's gone. Pettigrew transformed. Sirius is in bad shape. He's bleeding. He has like basically been, he's lost the fight with Lupin, more or less. But these words basically act as a stimulant to Sirius. And he's like, what? What's that? Okay, I'm up. I'm better. It doesn't matter. It's like because he gets back up. Harry's words, he scrambled back up again. So like his anger with Peter is like enough to get him like off the ground and bleeding.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Like Lupin has basically gotten the better of Sirius and he's like, I can go one more.
I can do one more. I can catch a rat in the dark.
I can do this all day. It.
Yeah. What?
I said I could do this all day.
I could do this all day. Yeah.
It's a Captain America reference.
I got it.
Yeah.
I understood that. You guys are good at this.
I like this. Can you guys just come and always be in the studio with us?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool.
That would be great.
Cool. We record on Mondays. So. It's going to be a little tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Our office isn't this big. Yeah, wouldn't you know? Let's see. So I love this too, that like Peter has run away and Harry and Hermione, as ever, don't rush after Peter. They don't rush after Sirius. They go to Ron,
yes,
who has been knocked out as well.
Yeah, the friendship aspect of everything is on really proud display throughout this entire thing. Like it's very well written to the tune of like, you know, Sirius is making the argument that like I would have died to protect my friends, and even says like just what we would have done for you.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, at some point in time, right at the beginning of it, Ron steps between Harry and Sirius and he's like, you're gonna have to kill us if you want to kill him. And so it's like it keeps coming back to this idea that like these people, like the second iteration of the Marauders, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, are doing exactly what the core Marauders also did.
Exactly. Like even faced with Peter's escape and Voldemort's return, their main concern is still Ron.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they inspect him. He's clearly still alive, but didn't seem to recognize them, which I'm like, what spell is this? Like, what? Is he just stunned, I guess?
Stunned or like possibly some version of like a little like memory charm, which would be kind of ironic because it's what literally exactly 1 year ago Lockhart attempted
almost
to do to Ron.
Yeah, can you imagine? Ron, I'm like, where's Scabbers?
Oh my gosh, I can't go back to Ron liking Scabbers again.
Me neither. No.
His obsession with his rat this whole book has been slowly killing me.
It has been like, dude, give it up on the rat, bro. Yeah. Anyway, then we also have Snape still hanging unconscious in midair. Just sort of floating there. Cool. Can't believe Lupin didn't get him.
Yep. You're right. Like, and there, I'm gonna come back to it because I don't think now's the time to bring it up. But I think it's important to remember that basically they come to the decision because they can hear. It says, but then from beyond the range of their vision, they heard a yelping, a whining, a dog in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically this is what kind of like interrupts them from basically putting their full focus on Snape and Ron in this situation. And they're basically like, okay, it seems like there's nothing they can do for Ron right now. And by the sound of it, Sirius was in trouble.
Yeah.
So they're leaving Ron and Snape, and just remember that, in that situation.
Yeah.
So that's where we will last see them until we come back to this idea.
Right.
Okay.
That's all?
That's all.
Just remember that.
It's an establishing. It's an establishing shot.
All right. Ben's setting us up for something here. Yeah. So what's interesting, let's see. They take off on a run. They pelting towards where they think Sirius is. They can feel the cold without realizing what it might mean. And then Sirius turned back into a man. This is interesting. Like, I don't know why he does that. Unless it is what you said earlier, that this is like his way of dodging the wounds.
The wounds, yes, yeah. Yep. And that was exactly, that would be like the next like little like nod to that tune, is that like damage endured while in animagus form doesn't necessarily transfer back to human form. Like
maybe,
he is safer in this case as a human.
Right. Except that he's not, because the Dementors are there.
I know.
And like now he knows he's in real trouble because like, oh crap, the people who've been looking for me have found me. He's moaning like, no, please, please. And I think you're right. You're right from earlier that it's like he had like an extremely happy thought that attracted them to him and Harry.
Yes.
Were having super happy thoughts. And here they are, at least 100 of them.
I know. Yeah. And so that was exactly what I was going to say, because like, I mean, it's not like this is the first time Sirius has had to deal with Dementors. He spent 12 years doing it. But
right.
But now he's experiencing the effects.
Yeah.
Because now he has a happy thing that can be taken from him.
Yes. So, and yeah, because that really is the kids. That's what's so tragic, because they're so close to just having like a happy thing happening, but they're not going to get it.
I know. and this is
some
actually...
Some of you laughed and some of you groaned. all the Slytherins got that joke.
Yeah,
right.
There you go. this was another thing that I thought was kind of fascinating is once again, it's kind of like, it's interesting the way that you define what the Dementors are capable of doing to you, because nobody really enjoys the experience, but it seems like if you have that happiness for them to take, then like that is what causes the significant like deterioration by the effects of their powers. However, the way that you combat the Dementors is by using a Patronus. And what do you use to fuel a Patronus?
Happy thoughts.
So what is fascinating to me is that the very thing that they take from you is the very thing that you need to do in order to combat them. And I think this is beautifully written, because the Dementors are intended to represent depression.
Yeah.
And I think that this is like a really, like, depression takes your happiness from you.
Yeah.
But things like this is like an important reminder that like practicing like positive affirmation and practicing gratitude are like that is those are things that we can do out here in the real world that work to combat depression.
Right.
So it's like you can almost use and you should use your Patronus thoughts to bolster yourself against the Dementors.
There you go.
Which is just a PSA for mental health awareness.
This episode is... It's a good time to tell you about today's sponsor, BetterHelp. Yeah. Oh, did you? Nice, nice. Very good. Oh, man. So Harry indeed starts trying. One, he has to tell Hermione. He's like, I'm going to need help. Hermione yes. thinks of something happy, tells her what to do. And this is like the first time Hermione is like learning how to do this spell at all. So she's really having to fly by the seat of her pants here, and she's not going to be great at it. But it's what's crazy to me is that the happy memory Harry summons to try and do the Patronus is, I'm going to live with my godfather. I'm leaving the Dursleys. And like I can't believe it doesn't work.
Same.
You know?
Like this like, this should do it.
This should do it.
We're there, people.
I know.
You know,
like, I know. I wanna say when he's doing it against the Bogard, that's like the moment he found out he was a wizard was when he like shot stuff the first time.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't know. It doesn't work, obviously.
I had the same thought, and I think in this particular instance, because I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, this should be a big one for him. This is like the first really, really, really big positive break that Harry has had in his life. But it could just be the case that also under this particular instance, one, he's actively coaching Hermione on how to do a Patronus in real time under threat of danger.
Yeah.
You know,
well, this is like a great example of Harry's like instincts taking over too. He's like in full like leader mode.
Yes. Like this is DA Harry.
Yeah. DA Harry when they're you're fighting the darkness. It's things you don't understand and you're just acting on instinct and doing it. Yeah.
But poor Hermione is like, it's like she like jumped out of an airplane and somebody also threw the parachute backpack. Like, and she has to find it in the air and figure out how to, like, pull the cord.
I know. Yeah, so she can't do it. The Dementors are... She can't even get the full charm out. She's just saying, expecto, expecto. And then I think she eventually faints. Geez, Hermione. Keep it together.
But even that, I think this is another one of, like, you know, Harry talks about it when people are kind of, like, talking to him at the Hogshead, when it's like, well, why Harry? Like, why should he, like, you know, be our leader or whatever? And, you know, they're going through all those things. And, like, Harry in Defense Against the Dark Arts, it's like when he's in the moment, he really is at his finest. Because the thing about Hermione passing out before him is that the plot for the whole book has been that the Dementors have affected Harry worse than everybody else. So it's amazing that, like, you know, he is holding it together at all.
Yeah, like, I know. Because, like, even a single Dementor on the train caused him to pass out.
Right.
And now there's 100 and he's holding his own, which could be some of the training he's done with like Lupin. Like he's more used to standing his ground. And I think probably his happy thought is also like keeping him up a little bit. Like he is at like 110% determination.
Yes.
Like I gotta do this. But I also wonder, like, Hermione hasn't passed out the whole time. I mean, there are 100 of them, so that's probably not helping. But like, I wonder what's, like, going through her head, you know?
I know.
Like, what is she reliving in this moment?
Flossing.
Okay, so here's what I was thinking, though, was that, like, if, like, the bog, like, for oh. Harry, like, the Dementors, like, make you relive, like, your worst memories, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, well, I don't know. But, like, then the Boggart makes you, like, see your worst fear. I guess they're not necessarily the same thing.
Sure.
Yeah. So I was going to think, like, is she just seeing, like, McGonagall failing her?
Like, over and over again?
It can't be! But that's not necessarily her worst memory. But I don't know. What do you think do you have something that you think her worst memory would be?
I don't know about a worst memory. I'm trying to think of, like, maybe... I could imagine, like, almost, like, having to, like, watch Harry go into the final chamber with Quirrell, possibly.
Sure, sure.
You know, like, it's a pure piece of, like, helplessness on her
part.
Seeing
the basilisk.
Yeah.
It's probably pretty scary.
That would be pretty spooky.
Yeah.
Laser vision and everything.
Laser, the heat vision.
The heat vision.
It's coming right out. Man, we got pins. You haven't seen them at the merch table. That'd be pretty bad.
All right, let's see here. But you're right. So the big thing, though, is that Harry does successfully cast like a silver mist Patronus. Yes. And then the Dementor basically starts to come towards him. It says very close to him. It couldn't walk through the cloud of silver mist Harry had conjured. A dead slimy hand slid out from under the cloak. It made a gesture as though to sweep the Patronus aside.
I know.
And this is where I'm just like amazed with Harry, because it's like he's going down and Harry's just like, no, he's innocent. Expecto Patronum. Like he's like down until the last moment. Like Harry is not giving up.
Yeah. I think this is the other interesting thing too, because like in the last chapter, Sirius is saying the Dementors couldn't affect me because I knew I was innocent. And I was sort of like, well, Harry's sitting here being like, he's innocent. It's like the same thing.
Right.
And yet they are affecting him. But I think it's basically what you said earlier. For Sirius, it wasn't a happy thought. But for Harry, him being innocent is a happy thought.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But so here's the line that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that possibly Chief Dementor, a.k.a. potentially Death, he could feel them watching him, hear their rattling breath like an evil wind around him. The nearest Dementor seemed to be considering him.
Oh, like thinking about him?
Thinking about him.
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting. Like, to me, this is almost like, you've got like all the Dementors swooping in. Most of them are behaving to the nature of Dementors. But this Dementor, it's almost like I'm imagining it like tilting its head.
Like, oh, because, okay. So now we're getting back to Dementor's death.
Dementor's death. Like,
right.
I'm
this
almost
one is like,
it's like, there is something about this kid.
Ignotus.
Yes.
Is that you? At last. Right.
The ripple effect.
The Peveril.
Yes, because Harry's his descendant.
Right, yeah, yeah. He's just like, I recognize you.
Yeah.
You got away from me.
For a while. Yeah. But then
they
greeted each other like old friends.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's like, my boy!
Yeah.
Maybe. We have to.
I'm so not inclined to think of Death as a super good guy. But.
Yeah, no, I know. He's not a pal, but that's all right. But then it raised both rotting hands and lowered its hood.
Yeah.
This is, again, one of those things where I'm kind of like, what? Do the Dementors just shoot from the hip? Like, they just go straight for the kiss on, like, I mean, Harry is not the target here.
He's not the target. Yeah.
But they're just about to do it.
They're about to do it. I think you're right, because if this is Big D, you know.
Big
not Dudley.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Can you imagine?
I know. Dudley is a Dementor.
The hood falls back. In a round pink face and blonde hair.
Oh my gosh. That would be the old. I would really not have seen that coming.
It's like, no. But,
yeah.
You know, the other thing that would be kind of interesting to be watching now is that in year one, we always talk about how the centaurs are kind of like, oh man, like everybody's here. Everybody's in the forest.
Yeah.
You know, like Voldemort is here and, you know, has like his weird cloak mist thing. It's like sucking all the unicorn blood.
Mm-hmm.
Harry's there. Hagrid's there. And, you know, then we know that that chapter is called The Forbidden Forest.
Yep.
And then eventually the centaurs are correct in their prediction and Harry returns to the forest.
The
chapter
again.
Is titled The Forest Again.
Yep.
And the same group of characters are there. And what Mars is Bright Tonight is supposed to be dictating is that Harry is there to die. So I wonder if any of the less informed centaurs are like peeking around the trees. They're like, hey, is it happening? Still not it.
They're like, the moon is bright tonight.
The moon is bright tonight.
The moon is bright tonight. Back up, Ronan. Yeah, come on. Yeah.
The moon doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't mean.
Except for that guy.
Except for that wolf over there. But, you know, we're apparently not in danger.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So back to our scene. A paralyzing terror filled Harry so that he couldn't move or speak. His Patronus flickered and died.
This is a really rare thing to happen to Harry, to be so paralyzed with terror. Like, almost never happens again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So often, Harry is not afraid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this feels almost like magical terror taking over him.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Let's see. This is, I don't know if this is about just you, but I don't love the way the Dementors suck at the faces in the movies.
Like the whoosh.
Yeah, the whoosh effect.
Well, I should be clear that I don't like the way the Dementors suck at faces ever.
Ever. I know. I agree. However,
However, oh, page
let me
turn.
Flick back here.
Wow,
let me
look at
just
you.
This is how Lupin describes how it's supposed to go down. He says, "I suppose there must be some kind of mouth under there because they clamp their jaws upon the mouth of the victim and suck out his soul." And I'm just not seeing it, you know. I'm seeing a bunch of weird straw thing. Yeah. And just
it's like they're trying to get like that last
bit of
Slurpee.
They're trying to like vacuum cleaner out the soul from like a distance. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it says clamp jaws.
Clamp jaws.
Clamp jaws.
If we can't laugh at it, it's just sad.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like this, it even says like gaping shapeless soul sucking the air with the sound of a death rattle. So I don't know if that's like what they're doing moments before he's about to clamp jaws here, but but he doesn't do it.
He doesn't successfully do it.
He doesn't successfully do it, yeah.
Because, and it says, and then the fog that was drowning him, he thought he saw, or through the fog that was drowning him, he thought he saw a silvery light growing brighter and brighter. He felt himself fall forward into the grass. Face down, too weak to move, sick and shaking, Harry opened his eyes. The Dementor must have released him. The blinding light was illuminating the grass around him. The screaming had stopped. The cold was ebbing away.
Ooh. Yay.
It's happening.
Something is driving the Dementors back. What could it be? Yeah, it's prompts.
Death.
Death. It's death. This death. Is just what it feels like to die. Not that. No. All right. This is okay. So another thought here. It says, with every ounce of strength he could muster, Harry raised his head a few inches and saw an animal amid the light. That's, of course, Prongs, the Patronus, galloping away across the light. He says it was as bright as a unicorn, which, like, I know it's just supposed to be giving you kind of like a visual image of what a unicorn would look like. But it made me wonder, like, if you're a wizard, like, you have to cast a Patronus at like a Dementor to drive it back. But like, had you a unicorn?
Had you
a unicorn?
Like a spare.
Like a spare. You know? Like, could that also drive away a Dementor? Like, because even like the way the centaurs describe it, it's like if you've killed something so pure,
ooh,
like, you know, you'll be cursed. And it always talks about them kind of like shimmering in the light and stuff like that. Like, they seem like super pure creatures.
They do.
Like,
they
it seemed like maybe they could affect Dementors. It's just that, like, the problem is having access to one at the right moment.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how often do you have a unicorn when you need one?
Exactly. Yeah. Harry doesn't have one right now.
Rarely.
Yeah.
That's a good point, though. That's a good point. I mean, it would be interesting if even you wanted that to be true, and it was almost like you've got the Dementors surrounding the castle, and then you've got unicorns surrounding them.
Right, exactly.
It's like, that's how they normally can't get in. But then Lupin transforms into a werewolf, and all the unicorns are like, y'all, we're out.
Right. Well, here's the other thing, though. Like, if death is just a Dementor who's like super Dementor or whatever, and it's like, well, unicorn's blood stops death, right? So, right?
Uh-oh.
Boom. It all fits, man.
It all fits.
It all fits.
It's all there.
Death is just a super Dementor.
That's all.
There we go.
Okay. I like it. Okay, let's see here. Fighting to stay conscious. Yeah, Harry watched it canter to a halt as it reached the opposite shore. For a moment, Harry saw, by its brightness, somebody welcoming it back, raising his hand to pat it. Someone who looked strangely familiar, but it couldn't be.
Couldn't be. That's crazy, because in that moment, he thinks it's his dad.
I know. Which is just unbelievable. And especially because, like, and this is another one of those moments where it's like this story has taken, you know, this cast of characters, the Marauders, and it's like all of a sudden, Peter, not dead, actually a rat. Sirius, not actually a criminal.
Yeah.
Turns out, a super nice dude.
Super nice dude. Lupin, a werewolf.
A werewolf. So it's like we've learned something about all of them. And so in this moment, you're kind of like, no way.
Well, do you think in this moment you're supposed to think it's like you don't know who Harry thinks it is yet, you the reader?
I mean, I think you could get there.
You could probably get there.
I mean, I was probably like 11 when I read this for the first time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would have got it then.
Well, when he says, I mean, either way, in the next chapter, he's going to tell Hermione he thinks it's his dad. And I remember, like, there is enough other, you're right, there's enough other things that you're like, could it be his dad?
I know.
Like, there's enough to throw you off the scent.
Right.
Yeah, you're like, maybe it is. Oh my gosh.
That would be so nuts if you're like, whoa, James Potter just entered the
James
fray.
James Potter is back. Where you been this whole time, bro?
But unfortunately, that is the moment, and Harry can't. He doesn't have any strength left, and he basically hits the ground as he fainted.
Bam. And that is the end of the chapter. Bam. We did it! Woo! Oh, man. Good times. There's a lot that happens in that chapter.
There's a lot that happens in that chapter. Did we make an episode out of that, guys? Did we give you enough?
Yes!
Excellent. There we excellent. Go. Because I have one more thought.
Okay.
So I got to tell you, we'll back up a little bit. This was a fan-submitted theory that happened while we were out here on tour. So do you guys remember when I was like, okay, remember who we left?
Yeah.
Who was it?
Snape floating with Ron.
Snape floating. Okay. Fan-submitted theory here is that we have always perceived the way that time travel works in the world of Harry Potter to be such that whatever happened always happened. And therefore, the time travel that they're about to go and do has always happened.
Right.
This particular fan would challenge that particular premise and the way that time travel actually works. What he supposes is that there is a possibility that the same events will happen regardless, but when using the time turner, the outcomes of those events could actually be different. Mm-hmm. So, in this particular instance, what we know and who we know are about to find Harry and Sirius and Hermione lying there is Snape.
It's Snape.
The thought is, what if it's Snape who casts the Patronus?
On round one.
On round one.
Right.
And the animal that we see galloping across the lake is not Prongs.
Ah, but Lily.
But Lily.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought. I don't think it's true.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Harry would look across the lake and be like, oh, Snape, just like Dad.
That's true. Yeah. But I mean, I was like, this is fun enough.
It is fun. It's a fun idea.
But I agree with you. I agree with you. I land in the same spot. I think it's easier to interpret everything as the rules of time travel are the rules of time travel.
Time travel.
Yeah, I mean, time travel is not like a flimsy thing. It's basically science.
It's basically science. It works this way and no other way.
All science fiction agrees on how it works always.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. It always works this way unless it's Back to the Future rules.
Yeah.
Or Endgame rules, or yeah.
If you guys would like to join us for our TED Talk on PowerPoints,
No, but there we go.
Okay, so this is normally the part of the process where I would ask Jay if he has a review for us, but since we happen to have a live audience available, maybe you guys would be willing to let us know how did we do.
Well, thank you. I think that was a 5.
I think that's a 5. Yeah. I think it's a 5.
Yeah. Out of 5.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Right. Okay. Well, so what we're going to do next here is we're going to do like a Q&A with you guys.
Yes.
Here in the audience. But we have to close out the podcast first.
Yeah, so for the purposes.
Hold on. Let's just do that real quick. So thank you guys all for joining us for Chapter 20. Make sure you join us next week for Chapter 21, Hermione's Secret, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the Wizarding World right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardandcandles.com.